Says Lord Rises, goes on the issue. Obviously we'll drill down, but I mean, it's just as a reminder of the paragraph we need to look at, we need to look at is that Edward. Thank you. Yeah.
And that's in section 28. I think it was you who actually raised that issue in terms of paragraph C or E.
Yes.
To add the word safely there after efficiency and effectively. I think it was important to try and lift it up with the National Land Transition Act and also the safety aspects of renewing. It's worth looking into the touch.
Okay, if we could just add that to the minute. So it's the Section 7 of the Amendment Bill, but amending Section 28 of the original. To efficiently and effectively, should we consider adding safety? Thanks for that, Stuart. Anything else? If there are anything else, we can also, but just so we don't let something slip. You want to also raise something from, no? No? Happy. Okay, good. Okay. So, can we...
In reference to the inclusion or exclusion of all regarding reward...
Okay, let me just explain that quickly. I was making a mistake. Okay, so if you look at... I was relying on an earlier version where the or occurred. But if you look at the kind of properly printed... version of the Amendment Bill, or has disappeared. Yeah. Okay. So that was my confusion. Okay. So with that addition, basically, can we accept the minute so we get that out of the way? Okay. Now let's just remind ourselves what we're doing. We know what we're doing, which is looking at the Amendment Bill. But let's just keep in mind the time frame. We set a deadline of Friday the 7th. This Friday. For any written submissions, and we've actively approached Road Freight Association, South African Bus Owners Association, and POPGroup as entities that had expressed general interest in the park. We've not heard anything. POPGroup had a presence, you've got information on that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, POPGroup, we met yesterday, they welcomed
Wonderful.
Looking for all the submissions to us, they will submit their documentation in a written month. They said they got some from the seller.
Good. Wonderful. Okay, good. So that's good
news. All your cars, the power pool as well.
Also intense, yeah. Okay, good. So thanks for that information. What we're hoping to do is to finalize this next week. Because we're under a lot of pressure as Parliament, and Transport Department in particular is giving us a lot of legislation, we hope. So we want to complete it by next week. So So we will get as far as we can today on the things, the fiddly things that we're worrying about, that, you know, or that these issues we flag. We'll get written submissions. We'll have to immediately consider on Friday, perhaps, or on early Monday, whether the submissions require oral presentations or not, and that will be a decision we can make. If maybe you can empower the management committee members to make that call, because to get people down in time for next week, if we decide, so can we? We'll certainly table the written submission in the committee. The call as to whether they warrant an oral submission, a sort of presence or not. Can you leave that to the management committee? Because otherwise we might lose time. I'm just checking with members if that's okay. And if we don't make the deadline, we don't make the deadline of next week. So if you, for instance, you or someone, if you feel that the written submission needed an oral presentation and we've decided not to call them, we're trying to complete by next week, but if we can't, I mean, let's do the process properly. Then we'll just have to find ways of adjusting. So that's what we're trying to do. Okay. Okay, so then with all of that in mind, then let's get underway today and get as far as we can to our satisfaction with the process. So I suppose what would be most useful is just to go in order, step by step, with the issues that we've flagged, and just to see where we've got to. So the first one occurs on page 4 of this document, where we're dealing with definitions, and it occurs under 2D, where we're amending definitions. And under 2D, where we're defining a cabotage permit and a cross-border road transport permit, we said we wanted to just look at what we meant by permit and on issue, the measure of issue. Can someone please remind me of what we were raising? I think it was me raising it, and I can't for the life of me remember clearly what it was. Okay, just go beyond that.
I think we changed the period from... We changed it from 1 year, it was a different period, but yes. You can change to a period of 5 years, the validity of the deposit permit.
A maximum of 5 years, but it should be maximum.
Yes.
Okay. And what was our problem with that? Or what was my problem? I can't remember.
The problem was, guaranteed. If you come later on, every year they must submit a road with you, they must submit assurance, they must submit average, and we're looking at that the passenger.
You know what? Let's just turn these things off.
Okay.
We just have to talk a little bit louder.
The committee was worried about the guarantee for 5 years, and every year they must think about the documentation that we can see if they are sold in operation.
Okay. Are we still worried?
Not necessarily worried, but I still want to get more time. Because one understands that one vehicle is attached to one thing. And annually, we require them to submit only roadworthy certificate of the vehicle. But we are not calling for checking whether the permit is valid and has lapsed, still in good standing, or the driver or the operator of the vehicle's license is still in good state. We're not checking those ones. Because this, I'm looking at this vehicle as a taxi, and it can only operate when it's got a driver. If it doesn't have a driver, then it is useless. Now, what is the point of just getting the paperwork for the vehicle only annually and not worried about the operator? And you'll only wait for the operator to comply, maybe taking after 5 years. like as you said, that an operator's license may be cancelled, the driver's license will be cancelled in future. But there is no system to check that. If we think that the operator in the vehicle is a computer that can operate and ferry people, then if there is any check annually, why is it not done together? Why is it separated only that can be vehicle out and leave the other one?
Okay, I remember.
Not to be convinced.
Okay, I remember the answer being partly about getting loans and so on and small business, but let's start with stuff and then come down. Yeah.
Me, if you look at the mention of section 47 on page 10,
right, page
10. Page 10.
Yeah.
The second paragraph, 21. Section 47 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by addition of the following subsection. All holders of service duty are valid for more than one year must submit to the regulatory committee annual, together with the registration certificate mentioned in subsection 2, the valid roadworthy certificate for the vehicle, where it is a condition of the permit that the holder must purchase assurance, proof of such assurance is still in force in the respect of the vehicle, and that all premiums have been paid. Proof of the condition of the permit are being met is required by the regulatory committee and any other prescribed requirements. Failing which the permit will lapse on the date of lapsing of such a registration certificate of holder after returned to the CEO within 10 days after lapsing by delivering by hand or registered post. Where we brought that in what was submitted as a notice book.
Okay.
Okay.
You're happy with that? Okay. Okay. Thanks. Anyone else with a problem with it as it stands? Remember, we're dealing just with a definition of cross-border permit and a cabotage permit. So it's just a definitional matter, but it's useful to know that. So those things are then backed up by these further requirements. Okay, so it seems we're happy, so that one we can leave as it is, okay? But thank you, Dennis, for it's very important that we satisfy ourselves about what underlines the definition. Okay, then under subsection E on the same page, the question arises then around the reward issue, and that was that issue of concern that it's straight into the Rotarians on their way to the 1600s century.
A non-monetary.
A non-monetary aspect of it, where there might be collective contributions to the fuel or whatever, and is that really cross-border transport requiring a permit, or is it just a group of friends moving together and so on? Okay. We needed to look at it. I think that's how we left it. Yeah. Mm. Okay.
On that one, Chairperson, maybe to really debate this thing clearly, to be informed, what implications do we have? If the passenger put in petrol to be transported to a particular function, and then it is taken as a reward, what is the implication to the owner of the vehicle? Are there any levies, taxes, or whatever that needs to be paid to somebody else? Is there a cost involved? You know, one must just know this. You know, we should not make a bone out of nothing. But if there is any implication, that needs to be involved.
Sorry, I wasn't listening properly. Right at the beginning, you said, just go back to your first sentence, just so I understand.
Yeah, what I'm raising here is that if a taxi is taking people across,
yeah,
and then it is attending to, and the owner is getting paid, probably there is something that is paying to some authority.
Yes.
Now, with this specific one, where you are talking about reward in kind. Now, if it is for like this, as we said before, if you want to regard that as payment in kind, does this lead to the owner of that vehicle to pay something? And then, is that correct? Then we have to question the definition.
Okay, I think we're getting too much into the wrong end of things there, in my view. In other words, what the transactional arrangements are between a business person operating a cross-border transport operation and customers is not something we want to try and define law.
Yes.
We don't even for that. But what we want to make sure is that we're not that we are permitting through permits legitimate cross-border operations, but not require putting an onerous and unpeaceable burden on other people. So that's the issue. And so I think for me, personally, I think I'm happy with what I'm seeing there. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'll recognize you in a moment. Because I think we need to read what's added is all compensation, whether monetary or otherwise, okay, because the payment to a legitimate business person, taxi operator, whatever, might be by way of money, but might be by way of other forms of compensation. Paying for the petrol, providing them with tickets, free tickets to the football match they're going to, or whatever. It could be any number of, I mean, it's not just monetary compensation. That person might then have to find money in order to pay for the permit or whatever. That's true. That's not our concern. How they run their business is not our concern. Our concern is what requires a permit and what doesn't. And if one then goes on in the definition, receipts in terms of a contract concluded for the hiring of a vehicle and the driver, or the hiring of a vehicle and the separate hiring of a driver. We're not talking about freight. We're not probably talking, if it's a rotary vehicle and the rotarian is driving and so on, we're not talking about that situation. They might run into trouble and allegations in Swaziland or Lesotho to tell that that's what they do, but that's another legislation. It's not our issue. So I'm happy with it. In other words, adding other forms of compensation, because the rest of the definition makes clear that you're dealing with a business transaction. You're not talking about a soccer club, per se. You're not talking about friends who someone has a comedy. You're talking about a transaction for either hiring a vehicle and a driver, and or separately a vehicle and a driver. And in those circumstances, you require a permit because there's a transaction, and that transaction may be monetary or in other forms. Okay. Are we happy with that?
I also understand the ethics problem, because I think you've covered it partly here. And the actual is what would happen to someone who did transgress on the basis of the assumed possibility that it was done through some sort of political arrangement, without any reward in other senses of the word. But when they get to the other side, I assume if they accuse now of running a taxi business, which they try to protect happening, that situation arising.
Yeah.
It's up to that individual to sort it out with the cops and the police and whatever. But I assume there would be no final recourse on that particular individual or something for not getting the cheap service. Am I correct in understanding that? Providing it was a non-business transaction, let's call it that.
I understand the both of your explanations, and I think this is capturing it correctly the way it is here. Which is why last week I asked a question, if they do link a good people at the border, should this thing happen? Ntabiseng has a kumbi, and I want to take people along to Botswana or Lesotho. And I guess there I had a problem because there are 15 people in the kumbi and we are friends, we want to go and have fun.
Yes.
So just that's what I asked, if they have linkages with people at the borders, because I mean I understand about business and all that, they need to be rewarded and all that, and I think that they need to pay compensation to the customs and all that for whatever that I think that's what they understand as well. But our concern was for the people, because they kept on saying, we are trying to protect South Africans outside South Africa. So that's what I'm saying. If they, I asked if they do have linkages with people in the borders around South Africa,
yes,
to make sure that people don't get into trouble because of this, like the Rotary Club,
yeah,
people in.
Okay, they can't guarantee they won't get into trouble, but they are, I think they did assure us that there's constant bilateral and multilateral contact negotiation. And this whole thing is a strange piece of what, it's a different kind of piece of legislation, because it also has to connect up with treaties that we've signed with neighboring countries, and countries in our region and so forth. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But are we happy with this definition? Because that's the issue we need to ask ourselves now.
But Chairperson, how are they going to check if the payment was in kind? How can you prove that? If the payment of whatever was in kind, I mean, if you are giving a cow for the children, how are they going to prove
well,
that?
Well, how can you prove that money is even changing? You can't. But the point is that I mean, what we're saying is that we are prepared to give permits. But what we're trying to do is facilitate the process. We're not trying to stop a process. We're trying to facilitate seamless cross-border traveling within our region, fundamentally. Okay, that's what we're trying to do. And to do that, and in terms of the treaties that we're operating under, we can't just take South African funds and run business as we like, and there's no problem. We have to make sure that what we are allowing across our borders by way of road transport, cross-border road transport, is safe, is legitimate, and so forth. We have certain obligations to our neighbours and to our own operators. So we mustn't see this as a preventative measure. It's essentially a facilitating measure, giving a permission, basically, at a cost issue, but not at a huge cost. It's trying to facilitate the process. Part of the so that's what we're trying to do. So it's not about piecing to see whether a cow was exchanged or whatever. It's saying the way in which you're operating a business basically. And how you get paid, etc. is not about interest. The fact is you are getting some kind of payment or compensation. And for that you require a permit. And we would like you to have a permit so that you then can travel safely and effectively across borders without being hassled, without having to offload your passengers at the border and go back. And we want you to go into the future. We want you to conduct business. So we need to think of it like that, okay? But so do they. The PBRT needs to be thinking of themselves like that, as a facilitator and not as a piece. But it involves a regulatory capacity.
I think that's it. Cool. But Judy, if you come back with mad cow disease, we know there was a cow involved.
Okay. No, the cow stayed back there.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, that's
okay. Okay, so it's not a big cow problem. Okay, all right. Now, okay, I mean, obviously, something like this could be the subject of a court case.
No.
Okay. And in which case, whether the compensation was paid, etc. Someone might say we were just grocerians going across the border, etc. And it would be quite hard to disprove that. Although if you see someone coming across the border once a week or whatever, then and they haven't got a permit, and they say they're grocerians going up and down, or it's a funeral, and it's the same thing that's going up and down, then this is a problem. And they might challenge you and say, well, we didn't get payment, what's the proof of payment? So all of those things. And so we're allowing a court, if someone has crossed without a permit, who should have a permit, what we're allowing a court is to find or not find that some form of compensation was held. And it was a business transaction, and the person is running a business. Okay. But how you do that, all of that, and that's not really the intention, but the intention is just to make sure that we're also allowing operators to understand that we're not just talking about monetary payments, but other forms of compensation. Okay. Are we okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, I mean, we can come back to it, but let's try to kind of flag off as many things as we can. Okay.
Yes,
in addition to what you have said, in fact, this, if you've got a temporary permit for if maybe you're visiting the other country or crossing the border, it will give you a time frame within which you'll be in the other country. In a way, it gives a peace of mind also on your side. In the event the officers of the other country are stopping you and accusing you of transgressing some of the laws, this is for the fallback to figure and say, you have given me this type of temporary permit, these people are stopping me, please assist me. Because they have got linkages with cross-border officers of the other side, then you are able to intervene and say, use that person because you have prevented him in terms of this particular section of our act and in terms of the multilateral or bilateral agreement that we have between South Africa and Lebanon, the other side of the other thing. So in a way, we'll have a peace of mind because once you're encountering some stoppage problems by officers, then you can call the PWCA. The people who issued with that authority can travel in the other side.
Okay. So we provisionally send flagging and we're leaving it as it is. Okay, just before we get to the next one in our minutes, I mean, just a small thing just to keep in mind that under the amendment of Section 4, that's in the middle of page 5, Section 4, and it's our Section 3 here, may levy and collect toll, okay? Should be a plural, if we're going to retain the toll thing, okay. But the substantive issue there is, do we want the CBRPA to be collecting tolls and levies on behalf of SANRAL? Now, this is a more substantive matter here. And we were skeptical about this because it was straying outside of the mandate of the CBR. We could understand why. I mean, we didn't have a problem understanding the practicalities of it, that it's useful to have a presence in these projects. But is that presence where to collect tolls and levies on behalf of SANRAL, or is it to check on cross-border flow and make sure that's not? So let's play in the state law driver.
I'm confused the issue, but they can only collect on behalf in the manner contemplated in Section 28, they can't, it must comply with Section 28 of the Act of National Roads, Agents of National Roads Act, so
right.
They act as agents for
Okay. So I agree with that. I mean, we're not contemplating something that's illegal. It's more the principle that we're trying to. What kind of mandate are we trying to keep the CBRPA fixed on? Thanks for that. I mean, that's correct. In other words, we're not saying forget about the SANRAL legislation and its mandate. And it is mandated. I mean, that it's currently doing it, mandating for other agencies or entities to run toll gates on its behalf. So we're aware of that in practice. And so why not the CBRPA? That's the proposal, okay. And our provisional answer to that is why not? Because the CBRPA is beginning to show signs, in our view, of mandate focus, turning the ship around. We're quite pleased with that. And we're a little bit worried that this might distract us a little bit. Because maybe this is where it will make money, agencies tend to follow the money, and not necessarily, understandably, and not necessarily a mandate. So that's the thing. It's not some huge problem that we've got. It's a practical issue, really. It's a mandate principle, but practical issue. So it did not come from outrageous rejection from our side. It's just, have we thought it through properly? It doesn't have to happen, so maybe that's the safeguard that we're allowing that to happen. But we'll call on the Department of Transport or whatever that oversees the thing to make sure that there isn't mandate drag or defocusing on something. So that's what we're problematizing. So it's not like we're not entrenched in a position. We're just saying there's an issue here. Let's think about it. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
after 12 days.
Yes.
It's only at the 12 days next to the point of entry.
Yes.
And the one that we are focusing on now is this Sandal initiative. It's the first in the country.
Yes.
And Sandal initiative, if it's successful, they will be looking at another one on the Mokuto corridor.
Yes.
So if we are empowered on this one, then we will know that we have an expertise to participate in the Mokuto corridor.
Yes.
But it is not going to be efficient as before there is now.
Okay, there are other interested parties who want to hold on to their collecting functions and anything. Pete, and then I'll turn the next on to
Chairman, as you know, all the other countries are charging, hopefully in charges, and we want our operators to push us for reciprocation, which this committee don't want to do, let us reciprocate. And we're working with Sunil to keep the foreign vehicles on the national road. What we're going to do is, what is the idea of the whole thing, is we will, if the vehicle is going to, heavy vehicle comes from Zimbabwe, we will pay toll, e-tax to Johannesburg, we will look at on his passenger list, or his consignment list, or service. And then, if he goes on the alternative route, he locks the money, and the money is paid over to some level. We will not collect the money, but our people will be there. We will have team parking or something, or everything.
Yeah.
That is only to get the international operation on national roads. So that can, with this new influx of unroading vehicles before fish, chicken buses, we can stop the vehicle there, test it, it is unroading. We can take his own time and turn him back, and the human factor that the people is sitting at the border post or on the road, they are going back to the border and not on the south.
Okay. So, and that inspection would be a CBRTA inspection or someone else?
The CBRTA will be a training like a traffic department for road bushing and overloading.
Limit,
and then
so
the other
just
thing.
To get
what you're saying.
This is
Limit
for
some question. Sir, at the border post, we are having police and they are doing their job.
Yeah.
And parcel posters for the wheels, then they take somebody there to do the job that is belongs to us or cut out of it. Then I'm just thinking, with the CBRTA, why do they want to do some job? Why not accommodate the Sandal officials to do their own job, collecting those levies? Because I'm worried, because any involvement of the agency in doing Sandal's work in terms of collection, it will also involve aiding the cost into the desert for Sandal. They're not going to do that job for your time, for Sandal. There will be an addition to the overall levy that needs to be paid. And that can't be good news. I mean, we can't celebrate that, because it will just even make life difficult for those that don't have all the needs. I think that's my point of contention.
I can name it.
Oh,
you want it with more clarity.
Yeah, it was more, but like I needed him to clarify what he was saying. But again, to add on what Mashile has said, without repeating his way, I think people have to work according to their mandate. I think for the interim it will work, but as time goes on, we have problems and all that. We'll have problems of not knowing what Sandal is doing and what CBRT is doing in the long run. So I think we should not be distracted with other mandates, but concentrate in our own mandate. More so the confusion, people will be more confused at the border gates and all, border posts and all. We don't want that.
If you look at Section 28 of the Sandal Act, the heading says operating of a toll road and levying of toll by authorized vendor. That means the people will be authorized by Sandal, they can levy toll on their behalf. Now the level of toll, operation of toll by CBRT is not automatic in this instance. There should be a request maybe even by Sunrail to CBRT to say, because already we've got officials there and only at that one specific border, we want your officials also to request that your officials also can collect tolls on your behalf. There should be some kind of an arrangement with CBRT and Sunrail. Then CBRT's intention with this one is that in case Sunrail approaches us and request that please the levy tolls for us, because we don't want to come up with duplication of staff at that specific point that they are talking about, then they can be allowed and they are empowered to temple the act, we can do that. Because the temple of the Sunrail Act, Sunrail can enter into an arrangement with any other person to levy and collect tolls on behalf of the agency for own account. Now, in case Sunrail requires CBRT to do that levy tolls, CBRT must find itself being empowered by its own legislation to can assist Sunrail. That is why if we look at the reading of clause 3, it says the agency may levy toll and may levy and collect toll on behalf of Sunrail limited in the manner contemplated in section 28 of Sunrail Act. So it's not an automatic mandate that is given to CBRT. They may, in the event they are requested by Sunrail or Sunrail wants to enter into an arrangement with them. Coming back to the question of Mr. Mashilo saying that there will be an additional levy or increase in the levy, that I don't think is avoidable, because even if it's not CBRT collecting on behalf of Sunrail, let's say Trike is collecting on behalf of Sunrail, any other company collecting on behalf of Sunrail, that company, especially if it is a private company, even CBRT, I think it's even better because it's almost a state institution. Then there will be some kind of understanding for the members of the public. But if it is a public company, they can come up with an agreed fee that might increase that levy. And already now, I think, if there is a company collecting on behalf of Sunrail, there is a levy that Sunrail is paying over to the collector.
Thank you.
Sure.
Sure.
I'm very
good
with what you include in the session, and I'll tell you why. Firstly, you know, it's difficult to see the two caps that have been proposed to have been worn by, you know, the cross-border regulatory authorities and such, and that being worn by Sandra. Sandra is there to build roads and to maintain that. Now, you're aware and you're conscious of this committee, you're questioning, you know, at previous hearings about them putting in facilities for overload. Now, they've done that out of the interest of trying to safeguard their roads, because they realise no one else is doing it. But that role of looking after that and ensuring that trucks are not overloaded is definitely not the Sunrail's job. It could be yours. In other words, you would have to go and hire those premises and undertake a role in there with the traffic department and such to make sure that everybody's compliant with affects vehicles that are crossing borders with firms. But to actually see people, the public, the motorists going into a facility where A, they are going to be checked for permits, and if it's you fined for having this wrong or that wrong with the vehicle, and the same token trying to get from them. Now a toll fee, a levy, to be able for them to ride on that stretch of road, to me, is actually just not fine. And secondly, what you've got to understand under Section 28, Adam, is that actually allows an agency to operate on behalf of them. It could be a private concessionaire. You've got to go into the complications of dealing with that concessionaire in terms of what role they're going to do and whether they're going to collect the funds on your behalf or you're going to collect on theirs. I promise you, I just see this as something unnecessary. I do believe that your role in looking after the interests of our roads in terms of overloading of trucks coming across from Zimbabwe that are unroadworthy is right. And that can be done separately. And in all intents and purposes, I think in these border post facilities that have been setting up, they have now, Sandra, what I understand, that they've done on the Maputo corridor, they've also done it in every other construction job they've done, they've actually built in these facilities in the interest of their own roads being protected by having them there. But for heaven's sake, I don't think we can combine the two, and I really believe that we should reconsider this clause, and if necessary, you know, put your mandate on the table in terms of what you intend doing, but not involved in Sunrail as an agent, or for that matter, their concessionaire.
Okay. No, you've expressed our collective opinion, I think, quite well. Thank you. But let's just go back quickly to Chief, because I first seen the very first point he was making, which was something comes through, let's say, from Zimbabwe, and some kind of tedious pain, and they must stick them to their particular route that they're saying, and if they, it's like a deposit that they say, and if they fail to, if you're picking up that they're not sticking to their route, that they forfeit the deposit.
Now
just explain that to me.
What happens is, if a vehicle comes to this, we got a checkpoint between Messina and Faithbridge,
yes,
where this Samral was holding his thing to the effect. Samral asked us to put a condition now on our permit,
yes,
that all vehicles, international vehicles, must move on national roads, not
right,
secondary roads, because they've got a heavy traffic.
Right.
Now, what is going to happen is like an e-tag. You count all the toll roads,
right,
till Johannesburg,
yes,
and he pays the fare at Messina at the toll gate,
yes,
and he goes through,
yes,
and if he goes to Durban,
yes,
he pays.
You've got an electronic record of
electronic. It's like an e-tag.
And if there's and on the return, if there's any anomalies, no, then you query them, and some kind of deposit.
The same, the money, if you account all the toll gates to Johannesburg,
yeah,
and to Durban,
yeah,
is what they're paying on the forward journey. The return journey, they're coming back.
I understand. But what is the penalty then if they go off?
If they go off, that will be a penalty according to our act if they are on the
forward. They'll be fined in some
form.
So to do that, it says, would require an active presence and interface between yourselves and Samral and all the agency operating,
yeah,
the respective toll. So that we appreciate. We don't have a problem with it. We like that. That you should have a strong, which is what Stuart has talked about, amongst other things. I mean, you know, for instance, the waiverages and things like that. We certainly need to beef up your capacity to do those things. And certainly now the electronic trail is great. But that's not quite the same thing as what we're expressing here.
Okay.
This suggests that you sit there collecting all the tolls, or could you? You see. So why is it expressed? I mean, that doesn't want you to cooperate actively with Samral and other entities, agencies or whatever, involved amongst other things in toll collection, so that you are able to build up, amongst other things, as you're saying, an electronic record of routes and so on, and see whether they're square with what the permission has been given. That's fine. But that's not the same thing as,
yes,
collecting a car or levy on behalf of Samral.
This seems possible. We will not do it because we cannot manpower to sit there 24 hours.
So one put it in.
But we got T-Tags in our office.
Yeah.
We're mobile. Someone buys a 25,000 e-tag to put onto his vehicle,
yes,
coming from there.
Yes.
He just e-tagged us that we got agreement with Samral,
yes,
and the approval of the minister and everything that we can sell the tickets. We done it in the past. I don't know if it was illegal or what.
Okay.
But we were once get it legal. That is, but the one is, we're not registered at the border post and say, tickets, not our people. We've got lots of other work to do. We don't.
Okay, help us then. Help us to write a slightly better definition of what it is that you want to do. It's probably not necessary. It's probably not necessary, okay? As long as you're not doing anything that is Samral, we don't have a particular problem. But and you're not trying to sit in the toll station as TBR station.
No.
But that's what's implied,
yes,
and that's what worries you and all the rest of us as well.
But the legal people must help me, we have or somebody, we just, if there's an MOU, and I'm not understanding between us and Samral, just to collect, sell this.
Don't even talk about that, or I don't know, just say, if we need to say in a legislation, and I doubt it, because there's nothing prevents you entering into a memoranda of understanding with Samral, and nothing in Samral Act prevents them from, in fact, it's very actively encouraged to do precisely that. But you're a legal persona, you have the ability to enter into a memoranda of understanding. Fine, do it. Now, if we think if we pick up, if the department or parliament, more like a gender department, picks up that the MOUs that you're signing, usually with general, are beginning to stray outside of your mandate, then it's the job of the department that's oversighting you in the first place to say, no, there's something problematic with that memorandum of understanding. So we don't want to know about that. Okay, let's just leave it out, because it gives the wrong impression of what you're quite correctly trying to do.
Okay.
But, in other words, just provisionally leave it out.
Yeah.
But let's just make sure that the department, give them a week to think about it and to make sure that what you're quite correctly wanting to do, we support you fully in wanting to do what you want to do with Danwell and memorandums of understanding and stuff. Support that, of course. Okay. Does it need this? We don't think so.
According to the legal advisors, they said we can withdraw it.
Okay, but we also, legal advisors give three off the top advice. Because a minute ago they were arguing you need it. Okay, now they're arguing you don't. That's fine, I'm pleased that they think they need it. But let's ask them also to just think about it, and we'll come back to it. Okay. Because the alternative might be to find complicated wording. I'm not in front of the table, but maybe just to give you the assurance that you have the backing for what you want to do, they might want to think about the possibility of wording. But I suspect it'll get too complicated to achieve what you want. Go ahead and have. But you have memorandum of understanding all kinds of things to do. Or not, but you just, they fact are cooperating with Stanford, you're cooperating with SARS, and I'm sure you're doing all of those things, so,
yeah.
Good job. Okay. Are we happy with it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, now let me just, okay. Then the next one was amending section 27. And I think that's on page 6, if my notes are correct. And it's that D, that little D, near the top of page 6. By the insertion of the following subsection of the third, blah, blah, blah. Where the applicant is a South African carrier, the board must take into account the promotion of small business, the empowerment of persons, historically disadvantaged by unfair discrimination, and any relevant code of good practice or transformation of charter published in terms of the board-based lessons number of times, blah, blah, blah. Okay, now what my note says, let me check some of the same ones. Is this just about freight? And don't we want the same thing to apply to cross-border passenger transport?
Mm-hmm.
And is it relevant? Because cross-border passenger transport is dominated by that kind of thing, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Or let's just remind ourselves what we were flagging there.
Mm-hmm.
Pete, I think you look at that, you're ready to
respond.
Or do you want to just?
Well, that is about section 27 is for good, and section 27.
Section 27 is for good.
And 28 is for passenger. But if you look at somewhere, you see under 20. Section 28. You must take also D in paragraph D, 17. And the one we need to consider is the.
Yes, okay, I've got it. D, so.
D, and just the section underneath is 7.
He
said paragraph A. The following consideration 27 A, D, and D above.
And E.
D is for passengers.
Yeah.
That means.
Yes. Okay.
It's a short.
So you're just not repeating all of it again, but you just refer.
Yeah.
Okay. Members happy with that?
Yeah.
So that's how our concern was. That we raised our concern. Okay.
The passenger one, we also agree on the 28, we've got the.
Okay. We'll come to that one now. Okay. So people are happy with that. Okay, thanks for that. Okay, then, so we're in the middle of page 6 now. We're looking at the amendments of section 28, and under the small c, there was a suggestion that in addition to efficiency and effectively, we might consider adding
page. We've got no problem.
Okay. I can't imagine anyone having any problem with it. So we have let's say, a particular service safely, let's make that the first thing we want, effectively, sorry, efficiently and effectively.
Safely and
effectively. Okay, who determines effectively or take they're all problematic areas, that grey area. But that efficiency is the more problem. Pizza, tell us how you would do that. Well, why we need to say these
things. Actually, we've got nicer words, layman's kind of words, but the law advisor said they wish in those words. It is this vehicle, which is on the road, which is top of the roof is luckily higher than the bus itself. It is to have safety, and we have to have the record of the person. We must prove that it's efficient investment plan, it's efficient, and we will have if we will go to Zimbabwe, there will be support vehicles, all that. It is that it's a whole business plan, and we ask DTI to help the to create a business plan and put it in front of us. If the regulator comes to grant it goes directly to the bank and the bank is
And there's, obviously there's an appeal process.
Yes.
And at the end you can go to court, which is not someone who goes to court and say, you're discriminating against me, you're using this efficiency, but you're coming with outrageous requirements, or you're applying it
wrongly,
inequitably, this person's getting it, I'm not. So all of those things would be and that's how, in the end, one would on a common law basis, you would have.
You do want to understand me, say, 3 years ago, there was no business plan. Now we implement the business plan, but not submit the business plan. And you will be understanding and reality of Google. How the people, business plan, they tell you exactly how many staff, how they're going to sell tickets, and how efficient they will run the service. And we ask them, if they got one vehicle, what is going to happen if your vehicle breaks down? And they all that is in their list.
Okay. But there's no, like, I mean, in other words, that's a process. In other words, the standards, we hopefully will improve and improve. It's not like there's a single definition which is static. We want to, it's a developmental process.
The committee must remember we are dealing with companies which some of them don't have vehicles.
I'm worried, because you see, our law allows vehicles coming from Zimbabwe into our country, and when we have this kind of the way the efficiency has been given, as far as I'm concerned, to some new elements of the citizenship. And how does that apply to a vehicle coming from Zambia? When a vehicle is here, and some of the things that they are demanding from our own operator, then they are not even applicable to those particular vehicles. We have allowed in terms of the carbon tax to actually move from one point to another within the country.
Okay.
You know, it's that way the efficiency is just holding quite a lot of difficulties in managing and monitoring it. I think it will be having a lot of things.
Okay, so efficiency then, like, but I mean, doesn't apply to safety as well? I mean, efficiency and safety are not the same thing, but I mean, isn't it very difficult to monitor safety? Isn't it a complex issue? Isn't it perhaps unfair that what the Zimbabwean or Zambian authorities might consider as permissible by way of safety is not quite the same thing as we do? All of those things apply, but are those reasons not from our side to seek in a developmental way to increasingly require more efficiency, more safety and so on from our fleet, and to and to use the CBRT, isn't that its core function, really?
Yes. Every amendment we do, we send to each member we find and bring, and they take in some of our, when we are JR&D, she will see, we take some of them 3 years, 4 years, to go to be in the app, but it is, we take the decision as JRD and then to...
Okay, just remember, it's the joint.
Committee, where the officials are sitting
from different countries.
From different countries,
okay.
And JRD is the operator right here.
But if a vehicle comes through with a permission from Zimbabwe, Zambia, it wouldn't be a vehicle or a business that has a proper business plan and so on, and that we would not have given a permission. We obviously need to let it through, but we can stop it if in terms of our traffic regulations and so on, roadworthiness and so on, then we can send it back, as you were saying.
Yeah.
That's why you'd like to be a company for
it. That is we stop it. We accept every driver's license, everything, roadworthy, everything. But when we stop them, when they are not compliant, we can give them a fine and return them. We can return a lot of them.
Even though they've got a permission from their authority.
But we're carrying this information, our app, over to them. To harmonize our act with our other
nations. Okay. And that's a battle, I'm sure. That's not easy. But we shouldn't assume necessarily. In some countries, their traffic regulations might be tougher than ours. Some of them may well be, actually. So we nothing we can assume that it's discriminating against our.
We have to understand that CDRCA regulates our own operations. And if we are sure that the area for doing cross-border business is of the highest standard,
yes.
We can sleep at night knowing that our business providers in the country are not violating or undermining the laws of the opposite country. I mean, mentioning things like proper management of that particular business as an efficiency element, it's very important to us. We do not want our vehicles to go into a foreign country and they do not have backup. We do not want them to go into a foreign country not understanding what is required from them to run that business in a foreign country. We want to keep our house in order. And we believe that by doing all this, our SADC counterparts are also learning from us, because they are copying a lot of regulation practices that we are doing in South Africa. So it is very important that we have to, now we are requesting for things like compliance with the tax regulation, the SAR. Maybe it's not an issue for Zimbabwe, but for us we are saying if our operators are tax compliant, we are satisfied that the vehicles that we are sending into the other country fit and proper things from our country.
Yeah. Okay. You're not happy. You're generally not a happy person.
Yeah. you see, my problem is that these things, you know, they look to be mounting, to be prohibitive, you know, even for people to enter this particular. You know, we bring in a lot of elements that can be used to actually prohibit people from entering the business. I mean, like as I said, what's the point if you have for the Skoro coming from Mozambique and being allowed to come to the country? And then we put a high standard that would be prohibitive even for our own local people to get in there and make this particular service to be an allied service. That would be, you know, at the end of the day, it will be a service that's provided by the air. You know, that's the direction I'm seeing. And that's the notion that I've been hearing since we started with this thing. That we're talking about people that are well off. But whereas it says, I mean, how intervention is, how developmental, how are we enabling those that are not having all the things that we have to be able to get into this? How if we keep on pushing the bar up and up and up? Thank you.
The, yes, another thing.
I'm sorry to take your seat, but what Mr. Mashiba said just now needs me to understand, to ask myself, you know, you ask the G on top there.
Yeah.
What is the relevance? What does it mean for them? The SMEs, the BEs, and all that. What is it for them? Really, do we really need to put them there? I mean, are they going to pay less amount as far as payments are concerned? Or maybe if they have three payments, they are only going to pay for one. Why do we have to consider them? Is there any compensation of that some sort that will help them in a way?
Okay, the question you're asking is a good one, because we need to take the D at the top in conjunction with the efficiency, effectively, and safety. We mustn't separate the two.
Mm.
Because what's the D there, and then it picks up again when it comes to that's not the freight, and then when it comes to passengers, the same thing. D is, when they give permits, we're saying to them, the mandate we're giving them, which we've already given to them, but now we're now adding to it, the mandate we're giving to them is on the one hand to promote small businesses. That's what it says under DA. It says when you promote small businesses, we're not talking about maybe it's white small business, but we're primarily talking about formerly disadvantaged, whether that might be that formerly disadvantaged persons, historically disadvantaged, by unfair discrimination, black people, okay, small businesses, particularly black people, and in terms of the broad relevant code around broad-based black economic empowerment. So that's a mandate on that. Don't just promote the existing players who are likely, well, not so much a passenger, because that's the sector, luxury buses, but the major traffic in terms of passengers, I can assure you, is run by black people, and I'm very, very much mistaken. They dominate the market, actually, because both our public transport market, 64% of people are using minibuses, actually dominate both the state-owned metro rail and private buses. And I'm sure that's the same. With freight, it's probably a different picture. Freight, we've probably got, you know, but and then we need to put pressure on those freight companies also to begin to transform and so forth, so that even the big players themselves don't just remain white owned. They transform their management structures, their ownership structures, and so on. That's what all these codes are about. Okay. So we're saying there's D, which is very important. It's about the things that you're concerned about. But we can't implement D unsafely, inefficiently, and unsustainably. So we can't just give everybody a cross-border permit and encourage someone to think that they can become Springbok Atlas tourists when we can see that they haven't got a hope of, you know, someone's lying to them actually, or given them a false promise. They've got a bus, but it's a score bus. They're not going to be able to sustain the business. It's undermining black economic empowerment. We create thousands of SMEs, none of which are possible. So part of the agency, and this is also developmental, that it's not just creating the space and a bias towards SMEs, black-owned businesses and so on, because that's what the D is doing. And it's saying in doing that, it's no favour to those entities if you can say, we don't care, you're black, you're small, okay, fine. We don't care if you're unsafe, unsustainable and so on. We can't, that's not a developmental mandate, that's just a quota mandate. You know, how many licenses, permits have you given to black? Okay, fine, that's okay. And that's the problem. So much of the storing land to people, to use another example, but not looking at the sustainability of the, you know, so we've got to restore land, of course, refugee land is absolutely, but at the same time we've got to look at the quality issues and sustainable issues. So, but of course now, how are those things applied? And there could be, and that's where it's not about the principles that we're writing into the law, it's about how these things get implemented. That we need, that's where our oversight comes in. Because there can be abuses. So the CBRPA, I'm not saying they'll do it, I'm sure they won't, but they can say, yeah, okay, we're in favor of SMEs and code, but this person's unsafe, this one's unsustainable, and so on, and use that as a way of favoring the big guys. If your committee's saying that requirement is open to abuse, like anything, okay, it's open to abuse. But it's not by removing it, in my view. It's not by removing the requirements for efficiency and things, you know, whatever, and safety. But it's by making sure that the department and ourselves, and the operators themselves, and the small operators themselves, that the requirements of efficiency, for instance, are not abused. And they might be, to favor the big players. The other mandate. That's why the two things are important. But I'm not the same in general.
My understanding is that whoever wants to get into that particular company will actually be approaching either a bank or something to be able to pension a compliance leader. And of course, the first thing that's going to be required for the bank is to actually approve the person who wants to see the business plan. You know, to convince them that this particular vehicle that you want to be will actually be assisting. And again, the other thing is no operator will operate on a business that is not bringing anything. Because, I mean, to make money, you definitely need to be efficient in operating the business. And then my question is, when CBRPA gets into this, you know, the only way that they can use this thing will be to prohibit people to get into business. Because I don't think they can help them the other way around.
No, but you see what you're saying. I agree with what you're saying, but my problem with what you're saying is you're saying that it depends to decide whether it's sustainable. Now, what the CBRPA is doing and what the reinforcements is, one of the questions they will ask when someone applies is, have you been to a bank? Have you got sustainable finance? In other words, is it sustainability and so on? What you're saying is, don't worry, because the banks will have done this already. But that's not necessarily the case. Someone might, acquire a bus somehow. I mean, there are examples in Transguy where the former operators, former drivers, have formed a co-op. It's been privatized, this type of company, and they've acquired it like that. They're backing for sustainability. In the current state, I would like to see them becoming sustainable, but in the current state, they're not going to be able to sustain an effective cross-border operation. And so, the intervention by the CBRPA that we want to see is for them precisely to say, to be of help. So it's not just yes or no, but think about it. If you're going to operate, you apply for permission. Okay, that's good. Now let's see. And what we would like you to do, so we want you to play a developmental role, a facilitating and developmental role. We want you to say to an applicant, and I think that's what you're doing, that's what you're telling us, okay, good, we want to encourage the expansion of this business. Now, what are your finances? What is your business plan? Have you got counterparts to the other side? Are there maintenance arrangements in Maputo? Because we want to, and so on. That's what we do. Otherwise, we're giving permissions to things that are going to be unsafe for people using them, our people using them. You see, and these are things that we're recapitalizing. Let's talk domestically. What are we doing domestically? We are recapitalizing the taxi industry. We want the taxi industry to be a key component for our public transport thing, but it needs to recapitalize, gear up, become more safe. So we're putting those requirements on the set. We're wanting them to become efficient businesses and effective businesses. This is why we're putting 7.7 billion into recapitalizing. Why should we make any exception on cross-border? But I agree with you. I'm not saying it's not open to abuse. But you don't sort that out by dropping reference to safety, efficiency, or effectiveness. But there's skepticism, okay? That's fine. The other thing I think also is not sure about.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Just thinking about so many things. I'm thinking about tax, for instance. how many expenses are causing on the road. Okay, like giving permission and you know, you go and inspect the car is fine, but the tires are falling all over the road and all that. And I'm asking myself, how are they going to punish the owners? Is this an issue? I mean, is it an issue? Because like you say, correctly say, people are using mini buses to go because it's cheaper, it's faster and all that, you know. So is it an issue to put it there? And, you know, I'm asking myself so many things that...
Okay. Let's take time out on this one, and obviously particularly as an ANC study group, it's something maybe we want to... I'm not being dismissive at all of what Lynette is raising, because I think he's raising correct issues, but I'm not, you know, obviously my view is not that he's not wrong to be concerned that this can be abused, but it can be, to favour big, powerful, existing players, and therefore in opposition to the D about. That's the danger.
Let me ask this question to CBR. I have this Kombi that I think that I can start some business outside. I don't want to start business yet. Maybe it's because there are lots of people who are already doing it in South Africa, and I want to start it in Namibia, for instance. What are the requirements and all that? Maybe it will help with answering some of the questions.
Presumably that's in the Namibian issue, not the South African.
No. Okay.
I've already made
links, maybe in Namibia. I have a friend of mine in Namibia that will say, no, actually, this will be a conducive business and all that.
No, that would be a Namibian business. But maybe what you want to do is transport people from South Africa to Namibia. Because that makes sense. It's not to go one way and then empty.
That's what I'm saying.
So you would have an option of either setting up your head office or business in South Africa or in Namibia. Both things are possible.
Mm-hmm.
How you sort it out in Namibia is your issue. How you sort it out in South Africa would be all of these things that we're talking about. One of the questions they will ask you, might ask you, is what business plan would you have? So that they're assured that it's not something where quite quickly you won't be able to maintain your vehicle and it will become unsafe and so on, because it's not, you know, you're making money, but dangerously and inefficiently and unsustainably. So their job is to make sure. Now, whether they will do, whether they'll be prejudiced to the wrong people, whether they'll undermine you, all of those things, we don't know. We have to create a legislative framework that nudges them in the right direction, and points them in the right direction. Whether they abuse that and so on, like any entity, that can happen. And that's why we need oversight once we implement it, once we pass legislation into it. Okay.
And
let's go with
the onus is on you, not on the agent. The onus is on you to prove a need, to show us as the regulatory committee that you have done all the necessary business steps. You have set up the infrastructure in South Africa and in the foreign countries. You even have to let us know that you know the rules. Some other people will discover that they don't know what they are talking about, but he does not even know the country he's talking about. We're not going to be a tenant to the person who's going to get lost in the wilderness of Zimbabwe or in Shai Shai. So we want you to come to us and tell us, this is the route I'm going to drive, and these are the border posts I'm going to touch before I reach my final destination. We also want to know, when you are a taxi operator, when you get into the foreign country, who are your alliances? Who is going to allow you to come into this ranking facility in a foreign country to offload people, otherwise you may be killed. So you need to show us that I have spoken to these people in this country. Here is a letter. They are agreeing that I should come. Further to that, we are going to phone that foreign country, the authority, to get contact. So the person cannot just come to us and say, I know this place, and we're going to do a check and balance to satisfy ourselves that this is a bona fide business into a foreign country.
In other words, Chairperson, if you belong to an association, these associations are different here, Santaco and Condesa and all that and all that and all that. And they may find that, you know, we feel that we are owning the market, you know. And they know, I mean, we try to check if there are no loopholes for people to be turned away, to be turned down because they don't belong to big associations. You know, that the laws who are saying, this is my wood, and there's nobody else that I'm going to allow there. And they will come up with all sorts of things to prevent those people from entering the market. Because, I mean, maybe the lucrative market, people are saying that there's money there, and I don't want anybody there. It's our association on the whole to cut off that.
Okay, well, I mean, those are things that, I mean, they're more likely to get killed in South Africa than if they're ranked in some other
country.
Okay, this is an important discussion, very important discussion, which goes to the heart of anything. Let's take Diana.
Thank you, sir. My question is,
Do
you think that all that
we're
talking about apply only to
communities
and
citizens?
No.
Not fasting. Anything that carries 9 plus 1 or is freight, is transport and freight probably. Okay.
Well, I asked this question
with
We do have buses from Zimbabwe all over the country. But along the way, people are here. What happened in that situation? Where people are being killed in certain parts from South Africa to Zimbabwe and others?
What happens in it? Where does CBRTA feature in that situation? What happens? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it depends, I suppose. But maybe Mr. Mabuza, maybe you might.
Yes. Unfortunately, some of these things they fall within different agencies within the Department of Transport. And one of the departments that goes into investigation of what is the cause of the accident, we ask them. They will send their people and but as CBRTA, what we have to satisfy ourselves is that should we be called to court to give evidence as to what this vehicle or nothing allow business to travel in our road, then we can be able to go into our archives or those of our competitors in that country to prove that yes, this accident that happened, we will take it as an accident. This accident that has happened, yes, it belongs to this particular person, it's Greyhound, and they are allowed to be on the road. Then the other organs of state or the law will take the court and investigate and take over the accident. That is what we
intend.
It is precisely for that, members of the community, that this has to be regulated. Because if people die in our country, let's say they are Mozambican citizens, it happened in November, they die, and we do not know who was in that vehicle, because that vehicle is not permitted to go under. It becomes an international incident. But if we know that this vehicle belongs to so-and-so, and according to the patent that is, these are the people who were inside the vehicle, then there is better administration and control of the recovery of the bodies of the people to take them to their safety of origin for burial and for whatever. But we control this movement of people.
Yeah.
One comment, and hopefully we can put it up to this thing up. Because, you know, you might not think it's best to actually not raise the bar so high that you're going to prevent people, but rather to make sure that the safety of both goods and people are taken care of. And I think what we've got to look at in light of those two sections is that it's not only compliance here, but also compliance in terms of multinational agreements that exist in other countries in accordance with all these various acts that come into force here. So, I mean, for us to send somebody into a country with a permit that doesn't comply then with certain of the agreements that are existing between ourselves and, say, Botswana or Swaziland and Libya, you know, we'll be defeating the object. And I don't think we're trying to get to outdo them by raising the bar so high, but then we possibly suggest to exclude, because the reflection D really, to me, would be the template to say, well, this is what we should be looking at in terms of legislation, in taking care of any, you know, unfair discrimination that might have taken place in the past, but at the same time ensuring that the safety of both women and the passengers are paramount in that whole process, because that's the template to me, to ensure that you're covered by the person that is the it's not saying to you can't do it because you're raising the quality so high that it's not going to happen.
I think
my question is the same as the comment on the it's more an economic question. It says promotion of small empowerment PhD. Now, you would want to have previously different people coming into this market, which is a key. For that person to go to a bank to apply for loan, he will most probably get 1 year. Okay. Second people will only come after offers for the same time. The same sense that one said, the offender is driving license, I mean there's a legal argument that it should have software compliance and so on. If you look at efficiency that you talk about, where do we set the standard? As much as we say, what criteria are being used over and above those standards that we set? That would be the question to me. How do you compensate for the company? Why do you want to be safe and efficient? Where do you set the standards? Is it the standard where you can check, where you can mark, that is known? How many people will use the discussion? Will people then not feel it?
Okay, let me try something. Is it a huge problem if we drop the word efficiency?
Mm-hmm.
Effectively? Safely. No one's arguing that. Mm-hmm. Efficiently is one of those words that can, you know...
The gentleman, we do it in any case. We alter a business plan.
You shouldn't say that, because I'm going to get this thing out. Okay. Can we flag the possibility of dropping efficiency? Because that's the concern is that efficiency becomes a barrier which undermines the spirit of deed. Okay. Which is not to say that we want to make sure that an applicant for a permit to get a permit, we certainly want them to assure us that they can do so safely and effectively. And we allow they also can be abused, of course. Unless you greyhound, you can't possibly do it safely and effectively. I mean, you can sit the bar like that, and you might do that, but that's not the spirit of what we're trying to do. So can we agree, Michelle, are you happy with knocking out efficiency?
Yeah, so I think it doesn't imply that it is bad. Because I was just about to request that maybe we just flag it again and continue to sleep over it.
Okay.
Because
let's rather sleep rather than sleep over it.
Yeah.
And there isn't a serious problem with knocking. Mm-hmm. But it's okay. So leaving, because what is the idea of the main legislation? Mm-hmm. Okay, but at the same time, obviously, what this is telling us, or that sitting as a committee, we need to, and which we've never done, because you know we're very busy. But somewhere along the line, we need to get a sense on the ground. You know, it would be nice to do oversight, and that's what we say about thousands of other things and never get very difficult to find time. Because a lot of this is not so much the law, but the implementation of the thing and how it's done and so on. You reassuring us that what we are asking is what you're doing, and we're saying, well, we have that that's right. But there's two big things here. The one is overcoming the terrible barriers that were placed on the majority of South Africans in terms of market tension into everything. That's absolutely critical, big transformational fight. But it's not just about a laissez-faire market attitude. We can't possibly have that at this time. I mean, that's not transformation. That will just reproduce problems. We, at the same time, have got to developmentally transform things as well. So it's not just saying, black person, you can now enter the market, no problem. And that's it. That doesn't transform things. We've got to assist people to develop business plans, we've got to resource them, we've got to develop industrial policies, we've got to many things that go into that. So that there's real transformation and not just market entry.
Mm.
But market entry is also critical. And those things, there's a slight rub between them, there's a slight contradiction between them, and that's because historically people can enter the market, you know. Can we move along?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll keep on this, but please.
Can I suggest that you, just in light of what you say, to read section 28 or page 22 of the original Act, and maybe 29, because that actually lays down the issues that you are really referring to. What this part of the Act, I believe, the members are dealing with is actually to bring people into the market, to be compliant with what is really in the original Act. I mean, it's just really a transformational amendment, which I think is quite, very accommodating, but not straight away from the structure of the matter that there's got to be safety, there's got to be an arrangement to ensure that there's efficiency. But anyway, I'm not going to argue over the words. The bottom line is that, if you're going to amend that, we might have to look at the whole other conditions of actually entry.
Maybe we need to amend our laws as well.
Because
you see, at the end of the day, we have a crowd legislation. As is TVRTA the only institution existing. There are other institutions which are doing different things. For a taxi to be bought, it goes through a whole phase of health, for registration and all these things, compliance and all this. Until the person thinks that he can tell people. But if you create another train of compliance issues, which are all, some of them are really similar to which have already been carried from other institutions, then it becomes very bureaucratic and prohibitive.
Okay.
That's why one thing is if we recognize if there is things that should be done by RTMC, then they should be recognized, for people to comply with them. If there's another institution must be recognized to comply with them, not create another set. Which, people complete that and then must start now with a new office. Another new office start out.
Okay, but let's make sure that, and that's a good point, but let's make sure that isn't what is in the case here. If I understand it, what the CDRTA, not much in the legislation, although allowed by legislation, what they do is they say, are you tax compliant?
Mm-hmm.
That they are not doing the tax compliance certification. That's another entity as a great system. And obviously, we want the tax industry to be tax compliant. It probably isn't very much. We've given amnesties and so on. We're pushing them in that direction. It's very important. Okay. Then we want to know that the vehicle is roadworthy, blah, blah, blah. That's not the CBRT doing that. It's just documentation already done by other agencies.
Okay.
The additional thing they are doing is, because what you're going to them for is to say, I've got all of that in place. I've got a bank financing. I'm tax compliant. My vehicle's okay. My driver's got the appropriate license and so on. But now, with all of that in place, I want to operate a cross-border operation. Okay. And that's a new step. That's a new step, which requires some additional things. It's a new step and it requires additional things. First and foremost, because we've entered into international agreements with other countries. Okay. So we can't say we're happy that you're tax compliant off you go, because we're actually bound by treaties. to provide a special permit for cross-border operations. Okay? And cross-border operations are not like other operations. They have additional things. But one, they have the international government treaties and things like that. They also require cooperation at the other end in some form, maintenance capacity, some agreements, the ranking, cabotage arrangements. It's all quite complicated. All what we're sending across our borders is going to be able to sustain that. So that's what we're asking them to do. We're asking them to not focus on 1,000 other things. Just make sure that other things are in place. They must focus on the capacity, safety, whatever, effectivity, but not efficiency, of the single operator or business firm or whatever to do those things.
Maybe that sentence tells us that it should review the ability of the applicant to provide the particular service in compliance with whatever those agreements are set in. That is the only sentence. Rather than just to say efficient.
Now we've removed efficient, don't worry about efficient. We've got effective and safe.
I was just referring to that.
You're fighting the battle you've won. You've won the battle, so you're fighting the battle you won. But you don't have a problem with them making sure that it's going to be safe.
In their judgment,
obviously, and then subject to
credit. And effective.
Okay, so one. Good. So you're happy? Minister? Nasila's happy? And we are happy, okay?
Yeah, I did the Google of the story.
Okay, great. Okay. Okay, how are we doing? We're doing fine. Okay, now then we come to the one that wasn't the problematic one, okay? The problematic one is this, and it occurs in two paragraphs, basically, and I think those are the two last slides that we've got, if I'm not mistaken. So we're looking at the top of page 9, towards the top of page 9, and also at the top of page 11. It's basically the same thing. Whenever a person is charged on the shrimp in terms of subject groups, that the person has picked up or set down passengers by means of a vehicle within 1 kilometre of an international border will, in the absence of evidence to the contrary, which raises reasonable doubt, be sufficient evidence that the person is undertaking cross-border road transport.
Come again, where is that?
Top of page 9, uh-huh. From line 10 to 15 or 16.
Okay.
Okay, so step 2, D2. Okay, and then a similar issue, let's jump also to the other one, which is on the top of page 11. No one may set down passengers at or near an international border where it is clear that such passengers intend to cross the border into another state, and no one may pick up passengers at or near such a border where it is clear that such passengers come from another state having crossed that border into the Republic, okay? Unless that person is the holder of the necessary permit.
Can you
extend
that?
Okay. Now, there are two issues here, okay? On page 9, and again, let me amateurishly do it, and then our colleagues from the department can go up there and some state laws are possible. There's two fundamental issues. The first issue is do we want to write this down in law? It's an issue that you can't, without a cross-border permit, set down passengers within 1 kilometre of the border if it's clear that those passengers are going to walk across.
They can
do whatever they like, but you can't do that as the operator. You can't do that because that's actually a cross-border operation. And unless you've got a cross-border permit, you can't do it. So that's the first. So do we want to write that into law, noting that it's already written into law, by the way? But we're not amending that aspect of it, we're sort of beefing it up. Okay. If I'm not mistaken, because already, if you look at page 11, section 46.2, no one may set down passengers at or near an international border where it is clear that such passengers intend to cross the border into another state. That's already in the law.
It's already in the national transport. Whatever got the act there.
Already in that? Unless that person is the holder of a... unless it's got a purpose. What we're amending is what's underlined there. Is that you can't also reciprocate it. You can't also pick up people who have come across the border unless you've got the permit. Okay, so that's what we've added there. And on page 9, what we're doing is we're adding the onus of proof. So that's the second matter. Okay. So we've already got legislation which says you can't do it unless you've got a permit to do it because it's cross-border. Okay. And then we're adding a second thing, which is saying that if you are doing it, the onus of the proof is for you to prove that these people aren't. Has anyone got this here? I think that's a good suggestion.
No one may set out a visitor to an end or near pre-international border. Where it is clear that such visitors intend to cross the border into another state, unless that person is in the border of the country to fly back to the border of the country. And then take their number of persons in the state.
Okay.
What actually happens at the border every day? You know, because definitely all the people when they get to the border, they are set down there. They walk on their feet across the border and climb on the other side.
Okay, so they're allowed to do that.
Yes.
And you're allowed to do that if you've got a cross-border permit. So you don't have to go through transporting those, in terms of the law at this stands, okay? What has to happen is if you are someone that operates from Bochabelo to the Lesotho border, and you're doing that on a regular, and you're dropping people within a kilometer of the border, that's fine. But you must have, in terms of the law, you must have a cross-border permit to do that. Okay. Now, in terms of operations and where we want to go, maybe what we want to do is encourage them to drive a seamless system, because that works better for the people that are the mine workers that are coming from Belcombe or whatever, who are going into the city. What we would like to see in terms of a developmental, seamless transport, safe transport, so we would want something that goes from Belcombe into the Lesotho seamless, so that they don't have to cross three different things, you know, they don't have to, but what seems to be happening is they either walk or there's a kind of van or something that transports them across the border, then they pick up by a third vehicle and so on. It's a nightmare for them. What we would like to develop, but obviously we can nudge things in that direction. But for the moment, at the very least, what we want to do is to make sure that what is in practice a cross-border process, even if it's cut into three or two or whatever, is permitted by the cross-border agency and not by provincial authorities. And that's the intention of the National Land Transport Transitional Act in this respect, okay? What we are doing here is just, the first thing is that issue, okay? Then we come to the onus of proof, that's a whole other potentially constitutional problem which we're dealing with. So, let's just think about this thing first, and foremost. Michelle, you want to say something?
No, Chair, you know, like as you say, it's already existing in the principal act. I'm really having a problem with that because, you know, when I'm looking at what is happening, people are expecting the local safety industry to drop people a kilometer from the border. And somebody with a permit is the only one that can take people across to the border. The local taxi who are not doing cross border can't take people closer to the border. They can only get closer by a kilometer from the border.
Yeah.
That's what I'm understanding.
Yeah.
Then people must be dropped there.
Yeah.
Then the only person that can take them there is the one who's having a permit for cross border. Otherwise, they must walk a kilometer to the border.
Okay, let's just check on
that. That's my understanding.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, I think that's a good question.
And now you are prohibiting local taxi operator to operate within the borders of
Japan. Because we're not now doing it. That's the practice. That's the law. Okay.
Yes. But, no, but that's the intention.
No. That's already there.
Yes.
That's already happening. So we're not adding that. But you're saying that's problematic.
Okay.
Let's
see. Gentlemen, why are you doing this patching work? Copper is from a point in South Africa to a point in another country. But with our operating license board, we're issuing permits to the border, and the taxi office, the taxi association blocks the border so that the cross-border cannot go through, and then it pays 3,000 rand to go through. That is our issue.
Who did they pay the 3,000 rand
to? The local taxi who blocks the domestic taxi to get permits from the operating license board. Now, what is happening at the present moment? Bloemfontein and Gauteng gave 170,000 permits to people from Johannesburg to the border.
Right.
Now they're standing at the border. Our people cannot cross the border. We've got only 40 operators.
Right.
The city got only 40 operators.
Yeah.
That's one country. If we can block the operating license board to interfere with cross border, we're happy that we scratch all that. But if they interfere with cross border, cross-border is from one point in South Africa to into material or where and in the passenger. He is not allowed to pick up off that jail. He pick up to the mine, he drops that material. He pick up the material, he drops at the mine. That is cross-border. But now, what's happening here, we've got no problems with other countries, like Mozambique. We send them to Maputo, Beira, everywhere. Zimbabwe, we send them right through. But operating license board interfering, that is why that's what is there. They're issuing that permit to the board.
Okay. But now Mr. Mashili's point is, who is suffering in this?
The passengers.
The passengers, that's his point. Now how do we clean that up?
The owners of the vehicle.
Sorry?
I'm saying I'm representing those passengers, not the owners of the vehicle.
Yes, okay. So we're saying we've got a problem with the passengers. And it's not exclusively probably, but it's particularly localized around the pre-service duty board.
Okay.
Now, and we're all agreeing that it's a passenger issue.
Mm.
Okay. Now, how do we fix that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think
Mr. Mashili
has this legislation, we have to look at it in practice as well as the United States. When a cross-border taxi picks up people, firstly, what you need to do, you need to have people who are going to a particular destination into the foreign country. You're going to complete a manifest, a passenger list. This tells you that in this vehicle, there are so many people who are going to Marseille. There is no point that you are going to have those people alighting for this embassy within the borders of this country. That is how cross-border is doing.
Hmm.
Now, I understand the concerns that they have is the people who are crossing the border of Lesotho coming into South Africa. And they say they are 1 kilometer from the border. Who is going to transport them? We are not worried about it because there are local taxis. What we do not want a cross-border taxi coming from South Africa, from Gauteng, traversing the Free State. When it reaches 1 kilometer before the border, then it picks up someone there. And this person says, I am going to Marseille. We have a problem with that because this person has not been recorded from the point of pickup. But if this person is in the Free State, wanting to move towards the border, it must be a local taxi operation. Cross-border must not be involved in picking up those people. And cross-border should not get involved in dropping off people that they have taken into South Africa and drop them off within South Africa because you are now not doing it. You are doing an intra-provincial sailing of people. That can create violence. Because the taxi operators of that area are going to ask the question, and say, but we saw you dropping off passengers here, but you are a cross-border operation. You are taking our business. By doing this, we are trying to protect them. If, for instance, somebody in Sizek moves from the township of Sizek and he crosses the border, he comes to the taxi rank, he is now in interprovincial transport mode. We do not regulate that. But when somebody is leaving Kaute or leaving Northwest from MI going to Lesotho, his end destination should be in the same vehicle across the border into the point where he must be offloaded. That is what we are trying to...
But that isn't what you're saying. That isn't what you're saying about, you see. Because, and that's very useful what you've said, but even in what you said, there's some other issues. Okay. Now, from a passenger point of view, because that's what we are doing, that's the perspective we're looking at, and by and large we're talking about poor people like mine workers and so on. But from a passenger perspective, what we there are various forms of cross-border. There's the welcome to material, I can't see how you can say that they've got a load only at Delcom and nowhere else. Because that isn't how luxury coaches and stuff. They have a manifest, but they will pick up passengers. I mean, a sustainable and efficient coach cross-border operation is going to be picking up people. Obviously with a big flow of line workers at Easter or Christmas or whatever, okay, maybe you can complete your load and your manifest in one location or a couple of mines in one, and then move all the way through to the city. But typically, you might also want to run a cross-border operation which goes through Telkom, Bloemfontein, and so on. You can't do that.
You have to fill up that load.
Okay.
And if you are a bus, you have a timetable. When your departure time has come, if the bus is not full, you have to leave. Because if you are standing there...
So the only cross-border thing is one pickup in South Africa and one drop-off at the other. One drop-off, okay. Because there's no sabotage that we can under the single edit. Okay.
Mm.
Okay, all right. Okay. But, okay, so that would be... So a welcome to Matera is one kind of run, okay. But another kind of run would be... We would presume the people right within a kilometre, living in small villages and things like that, also require transport, which is cross-border.
Mm.
It's cross-border transport.
Mm.
More likely than run by some local taxi operation, taking people to Matera.
Yeah.
But presumably there's a fair amount of traffic like that. It's not your mine workers, but it's something else. It's people, families across borders and things like that, who move back and forth. And that's also a cross-border operation.
Yes.
Okay. And what's happening at the moment is the one kind of cross-border and the other kind of cross-border are bumping into each other.
Mr.
Chairman,
what is happening now?
Forget what I just lost it. What's actually happening now?
Operating license board is creating a hamper to cross border. They block the taxi association, block the city border. You must offer the people from the mines, from Delta mines, 14 buses a week, Friday night, offloaded material. Otherwise, you must pay 3,000 rand. Cross the border.
Okay, and then what happens is that those...
That's why we put all that through vision to turn that the local operating license board cannot issue permits. But if we revise the NCRA and you got a clause in that to protect the cross border, we are happy.
Okay, but now, so 14 buses arrive kilometer or two or three or whatever from the border, and they get stopped, not by law enforcement agencies, but by taxi associations, and they're told 3,000 rand, please, or stop and turn around.
Yeah, or you.
Most of them then stop, offload passengers. Then the minibus associations that have stopped them then travel to the border. Then they offload themselves and come back.
Yeah.
Because they don't have a cross-border operator.
Yeah. Then the people pick up.
And they walk across with all their stuff coming from the mines and all of that. So they've got to walk across, and then they get picked up by another set of
taxis. Yeah. So they reach the mountain, and now with the NUM, the National Mine Unit, the sewing machine disappear.
Yeah, all of this medicine. Because people are coming up with bicycles.
The only thing is, what we do with that, we're talking openly here, is to stop the operating license for issuing permits.
In competition.
Okay.
But I mean, as far as I'm hearing, there is a lot of negotiations that must happen, other than bringing a legislative.
We're juggling with two things. I agree with what Ms. Mashiel is saying very much now on this one. It seems like you're asking us to try and solve an issue, which is really but I'm not just dismissive, because there's a second problem with that. But the Department of Transport needs to rein in through MINMEC or whatever the free tech operating license for. Rein in, but also then the zealous, a proper strategic understanding, and we understand now, because the department has also picked up this problem, the operating license boards are laws unto themselves, but there are a whole set of other problems, institution problems with them, because they're not properly under the department either. The boards are appointed, right, and so we've set up a chair of chairs of the board, so they will try and introduce some kind of uniformity and strategic approach to all of this and so on. Okay, now we're So we're aware of this problem, which is much bigger than just this problem, but this is one symptom of a big problem with operating licenses. I've heard the minister say he's going to abolish all of them, but that's not to be quoted myself. That I've heard it very frustrated, okay, and we agree with it. Okay, so what Mr. Mashiel correctly is saying is, are you not trying to write a whole lot of things into the law?
Yes.
To solve something, yes, you are, I know. But to solve something that has actually to be driven administratively and whatever, okay. But of course, the fact is that it's in the law already, and not the one we are busy amending either. I mean, it's in that one already, it's in this one already, in the cross-border, in the original act.
I believe you're going to see the other one.
But I'm not sure that this aspect of it is coming up.
I think they're coming up.
Okay, that's your information. Okay, but we'll see.
But that is, I'm playing open court there.
That's correct,
That is it's a soft operating license for.
Yeah. And one
we can play with words, but that is the only two sections is keep the low operating license for away from soft operating license. We don't experience problems at office in the Bombo border post. It's only the two. We got 40 operators, they got 40 operators. We got a moratorium from the Minister of Transport to issue no permit. They got no moratorium, but they don't apply to the moratorium. But it is not your problem, it is our problem.
Yes. Okay. Now,
what do we do now?
In terms of the law now, never mind what we'd like to see happening and so on, what do we do in terms of the law?
What are we saying?
In these existing things with which we're fighting out of it, we're saying that we don't want people getting dropped off or picked up and so on. We want free, that's what we want in charge. But for the purposes of legislation, if you're doing that, you must have a cross-border firm. So if you're dropping someone within a kilometer of a border, and that person is going across, obviously there are little villages along borders and things like that, and if you're picking up and so on, that's a different matter. But if someone is fairly, if your load of passengers are bound for Madeira, let's say, then we would like you to be able to go right through to Madeira from Belcom. But if you don't do that, if you're going from Belcom to within a kilometre of the border, okay, that's fine. But you require a cross-border service to do that. Now, that's not ideal, but it's a way of saying that that operation itself must come under this act, and under this agency, because it's in effect a cross-border operation, even though the vehicle itself, the people are cross-border. The load, whether it's freight or people, are cross-border traffic. And therefore, you're part of a cross-border chain, basically. And to do that, that enables them to begin to regulate the thing more effectively. For them to then say, you're operating a bus company from there to there, or you're going from the border across. You're the local taxi association, and so on. So that you look at it. Maybe that's the better way of doing it. Maybe instead of, once they've crossed the border, to split up into several different directions, in smaller vehicles, and then all going to New Zealand. Maybe that's the better way of doing it. And so there's a business plan that relates to that. But we want you to look at it like that. We don't want this. Basically, this is taxing poor people. It's a roadblock to make business and to make it more expensive and more inconvenient. That's what it is. So that's what we think. So maybe we don't have a problem with this aspect of what we're meaning here. The problem is on the ground. And it's not with the spirit. And therefore we don't have a problem with what's in the National Land Transport Traffic as well. Okay. Can we sleep on this one, but approach it with that? And there's still one more matter, okay, which we need to look at.
Besides Chaperson, if you practice anything of border post, who's going to, before we amend anything, who's going to overlook and see that people are not carried on their way a kilometer before the border post? Because most of the time the police and everybody else is there, you know?
And how we implement is difficult, but what we're trying to do
I'm just trying to say, Chaperson, when we write things, we have to think about them practically. Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, there's nobody there.
Which is going to bring us now to the second matter, which is the second matter, which is hanging. But we'll come to in a moment, but keep going.
We got law enforcement in the street, but because of the friction between cross border and the free state, we were drawn them from the because there's always a fight between, and we cannot fight provincial nationals.
Yeah.
And we were drawn and beaten, otherwise works of faith and happens. But as we get something inside out, there will be law enforcement. We got law enforcement, we will do law enforcement that way.
Okay. Now, just obviously, when we come again next week, we need to just kind of I think we'll go away and just think about it again properly. But I think provisionally we're saying this notion that dropping and loading within 1 kilometre, where the intention clearly is, where the reality is that people are crossing over, is cross border and requires a cross border permit, where the vehicle itself is going through. I think
the vehicles will go through.
Yeah. It's No, it has to be. I thought that's what we've agreed upon. Because unless you do that, you're setting up a roadblock when you get into the problem. So we're saying the operating licensing board must get out of this issue. Because what we're dealing with is passengers who are moving across border. And we must treat it as a cross-border transport thing. And we would want to see one which doesn't discriminate against passengers. By allowing them to come into the picture means you create the gap for illegal roadblocks.
Yeah, Chair.
Yeah.
An explanation has been given to us here. Cross border is loading from one point in the country, South Africa, to another point yes. in the foreign country. Yes. And the vehicle must be the same vehicle that is taking those people across.
That's
what my understanding. And then also the conditions of the families was involving compliance in the other stage.
Yes.
Now you're sitting with a taxi operator who takes people up to the border, he drops them there, and the people go across with their own other plans to go the other way.
Yes.
This taxi operator doesn't need to comply with whatever it is the other side. Only because those people that are carrying are moving across the border, and they tell the state of this vehicle there. Now to be a cross border that must comply with the whole rest of MMOUs and agreements of the other side.
Yes.
When the vehicles are not even golden.
Let's get to it again. Let's get to it again. Now, just to keep it, the court.
You said you were outside of the passenger.
You said you were outside of the passenger. And what you're setting up a system, you're encouraging a system where a person says, I don't require cross-border, etc., but I'm going to stop these people here, and I've got an operating license from Sink to transport people from 1.5 kilometers away from the border to the border. I've got an operating license for it. And I don't require Sink. This is my business. And I'm going to make sure that I hold on to this church. It's my church. And what's more, I've got the permission of the Free State operating license board to hold on to this church. And so, to hell with the passengers. The passengers are going to have to get off 1.5 kilometers away from the border. They're going to have to get off again at the border. They're going to have to walk with their bicycles, their sewing machines and so on. And they're going to have to find some other transport across the thing. That's what we're saying. That's the problem. Okay. Now, okay, you're not happy with this issue.
No, that was not what I was saying. The issue of people dropped 1 kilometer from the border, I'm saying, it is not correct, because it's from the passenger. That's the first principle which I was surprised. It is not correct. Now, the other one which I'm saying is, when this taxi association is carrying people, I mean, practically, if people are moving from Malelan, going to Mozambique, and there's no, what you call it, cross-border taxi in Malelan. There are cities that are going, you know, closer to the border, and these people get in there up to the commercial border post. And then you expect them to be dropped 1 kilometer from the border post.
Okay.
Now, I'm saying that's not correct.
Okay.
But if the people then drop them at the border post, and then the vehicle goes there,
yeah.
Why should we carry this vehicle now to be across border?
Okay, that's a good question.
Because operating within the country,
yes.
and within the legislation as a taxi operator,
and meeting a real requirement of mobility for people.
And the people is taking the border post, therefore their own plans, you know, they know this is, we're going to the border post, we are going to Mozambique.
We're happy with that. We haven't got a problem. We're not getting offloaded and unloaded against our thing. So that's the point. We're trying to solve a Free State problem. And Mr. Nasheed is quickly saying, in trying to solve a Free State problem, let's make sure that we're not actually creating problems somewhere else, which we shall. Thank you. Okay. Yes. So, Mr. Nasheed?
Mr. Chair, I think I'm glad that Mr. Nasheed has somehow agreed with me in the way that he can. We are saying, where the point starts, we look at practically, the people who get into a taxi SMI, they feel in a manifest. And they have a passport. What does the passport tell me? It tells me that all the people in this taxi are foreign nationals. They are going to cross the border. Therefore, we do not want these people to be set off anywhere in this country. They must go to their final destination. But if the people want to go, not going home. All what we are saying is they should not use a cross-border taxi. There are other taxis. They should use an interprovincial taxi.
Mm-hmm.
It cuts off the confusion. Because you will find that there is an interprovincial taxi from the mine going into six states. And there is a cross-border taxi using the six-state border code going into the Delhi of Lesotho. Now, if we do not hone in the cross-border movement to say, you fill in your taxi, you cross the border, you go there, you don't stop anywhere. Then we are going to have this problem of people eating up into the local or interprovincial market, which creates a problem for us.
Yes.
But if we present them by defining what a cross-border operation should look like, and maybe we are wrong by using the distance, but we thought the distance was a good definer to say a kilometer away from the border post cannot be cross-border. Cross-border should move into, it must cross the border into the other country. The problem that is specific that you are talking about in Free State is a different matter here, as we say, we are going to be negotiating around it, because there, people are forced to say, you will offload everybody. But if the Act says, cross-border does not offload you, then we having the power, even when we speak to the local operating license board, that cross-border is a continuous movement. You do not offload here when these people are intending to go cross-border.
Okay, so Malalani is not more than a kilometer away from the border. Is that, because now we need to think about that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
In something that is less than a kilometer from a border, you don't want, you want a cross-border operation to be offloading and unloading.
There's a certain Algerian family.
Yes.
But my problem is irrespective whether the vehicle goes across the border.
Yeah.
You are forced to have the family. You have to now comply with the cross-border condition.
I understand what
you mean. Whether your vehicle does not even go through the border.
Yeah.
That's why I'm saying also that one is very bad.
Shaka said the intention, in essence, we don't want the vehicle to go to throw people like the border, because from their point of departure, if they are going across the border, that vehicle should have a cross-border permit, because if the cross-border is going into another country, across the border into another country. Now, in essence, what is happening, this thing comes from the cultural problem that I experienced. You find a local taxi vehicle which is having a no parking license or permit, dropping people from up until or within 1 kilometer from the border. And those people, the intention, because they're having cross-border and the like, they walk across, of which there are local operating taxis which with local operating permits who can provide that service. And people now, then the problem that normally for colleges is the interprovincial permits guys together with the cross-border will end up causing violence, because they are peddling to, they are taking my customers and the like. So in essence, we are saying, if you drop people 1 kilometer away from the border, within 1 kilometer away from the border, you must have a cross-border permit. But in essence, the intention is, we don't want you, if you don't have a cross-border permit, to load people from the point of departure within 1 kilometer towards the border. Because that operation, that thing should be done by cross-border transport.
The essence of the matter, which you're not talking about, which is so much easier. None of us have a problem with the Belcom bus on the mine coming. It's outrageous that there should be roadblocks on the way to the bus. We want that bus to travel through, right through it, up to a tree. We don't want some roadblock on the way, illegal roadblock on the way. We accept it. Okay. Now, but what about, on a much smaller scale probably, but I'm talking about perhaps not, a Malalani or Pittsburgh or whatever. Maybe I'm not using good examples.
Yeah.
Where you've got local people or whatever with families just across the border nearby and so on, but just a little bit far, who are quite happy to use two taxis. A taxi to get them to the border post, which then turns around. It's a local taxi, and there are five people or something and so on. And then they'll pick up some, they're not going to some capital city, not here or some, but they're traveling another 4 kilometers to the other side. And what Ms. Machine is saying, do we really want to force that local operator to be, even though they're never crossing the border, but they're providing a service to people who live, work, or whatever, near the border, and who prepare, the people are prepared to to walk. It's not a kilometre, it's probably 500 metres or whatever, to pick up, you know, taxis which will take them to their small little village or some other form of transport or something on the other side. Do we want on both sides for both of those small kayak operators, local, to have cross-border permits? Yes, absolutely, when it comes to the bus coming from Belgium, absolutely, that's clear. Yes, when it's taxis and so on, regularly ferrying people, still containing material or something like that, we want to encourage them. But there are also localized operations where people are getting on and off of vehicles, which happens whether it's crossing borders or not, to get from one part of Cape Town to another part of Cape Town, might have to take two or three tanks. Because not everything is seamless, unfortunately. Eventually, maybe we'll have seamless transport. Do we? Yeah. And are we not trying to solve a free state problem with an onerous piece of legislation which will impact on localized things?
We've got, Chairman, we've got something. We've got some people working in the district. The town of Suki is about 500 metres across the border.
Right.
They walk to the border post,
yeah,
and they get local taxis. We are not against that.
Yeah. But the law is.
But we like the law to protect our cross-border,
Now you're helping us to understand. You can't write law for a specific issue. Law has to have a general application. And you can't say, well, we're not going to worry about them. Well, if you're not going to worry about them, then we can't write it as a law. It must have general application.
But then you must go back and see read it off because that is our main problem.
Yes, but I think they're trying to solve in law an issue which is a practical administrative, having the teeth and the determination, not yourself, but being supported effectively by law enforcement, by whatever, to deal with the problem. Now, that means, that means that we just jumped into this by way of the amendment, but this issue is already embedded in both the National Land Transport Transition Act and your foundational act. So I don't know what that tells us in terms of what we're trying to do now in the next week, basically, in terms of sharing this group. Because I'm not so keen to now go back into the National Land Transport Transition Act and in the next week. But I think what I'm heading towards now, and thanks specifically to Mr. Mitchell for being persistent on this. At the very least, I'm thinking that we need to sleep on the amendments that we've got in front of us. And then maybe when we get to the National Transport Act, and you're saying that we're going to come up in it. Then maybe we need to look at the totality of it and then cross refer in that to the CDRT Act. So maybe that's where we should go. We're not unsympathetic to the issue we're raising. Absolutely. And I think politically we must say that very strongly. That, you know, the particular licensing board must be dealt with. And taxi associations that are must be dealt with. I mean, we don't have a problem with that. But you can't have a piece of legislation for the free state border. which you don't really intend implementing anywhere else because it's unimplementable and so on, as we're realizing as we're discussing. We've got to find a different way to do that.
I think that, you hit the nail on the head, and we've really got to go and look at that and see how we can deal with that. For the purpose of this exercise, quite important now, it's been leading ahead of us, and I'm wondering whether, this is not, or could be dealt with under the section 46A.
Of what?
Of the current amendment, where they ask for a system where we can get the taking space.
Just point us to where that is.
Page
9 of the bottom.
And maybe just tweaking that to enable the minister to have certain powers to sort of ensure that the process that should be happening is normalised in respect of the OLG competition with the cross border. And give certain powers here to the regulations that authority as well as maybe there, and then take this thing out from CQ until we deal with it when we get to the NLTPA, and try to see whether we can't resolve it through these special emergency measures. Not, you know, trying to isolate the case, but, you know, I would find that absolutely unacceptable that you get a situation arising like that. The associations with OLD licensing are now conflicting with and stopping such a, you know, it's unacceptable. But, I mean, I can understand why the CRBT want to bring this into the thing to try, but you can't deal with it in isolation.
Okay, you see, the fact is, yeah, I'm not sure that may be right. I think the minister, the department needs to look at this. We didn't have problems with this section of it. I'm not sure it was quite intended to deal with this kind of issue, but maybe. But it's a temporary measure to emergency. It's of that order. It's not, but okay, maybe it could be used to deal with a situation of potential violence and so on. Maybe it could be good with it. But, you know, to maybe begin to conclude now, because I think that's where we've got to. The what we're trying to do in the Amendments Act is to strengthen the 1 kilometer issue. But the fact is, even with it there, it's not solving the problem. Even so, but currently what's happening is not legal in sense. Whether it should be the law is what Mr. Mishida has raised. Whether we should skip about 1 kilometre and so on is itself potentially quite problematic, but we can't make it a general application. But even with it, and with its ambitions to be a generally applied law, you're not able to enforce it. And therefore, maybe it's not the process of the law. Maybe that's the issue. You know, and adding a little bit more teeth to the law is not the issue. It's something else. Getting a handle on the intergovernmental, I think, issue in particular, national transport, free state, and then the free state getting a handle on its own operation license is all resolved, because that's not going to be a problem for us. And then all of us getting a handle on taxi association, not in order to undermine them, but to not allow them to do. Okay, so I think we agree, which then, therefore, also, said Lord Viper, means that the ownership proof and so on, which is attempts to kind of add more things to the matter, would fall away if that's the route we go. So we haven't definitively, I think we're leaning in that direction, certainly at the committee, to not adding these additional amendments to this aspect, and promising ourselves that we will, when we come to the National Transport Transitional Act, review the whole thing. And then thirdly, we're saying that we've got a political problem. A political problem, administrative, capacity, whatever issue. And whatever decisions we take around the amendment bill, we mustn't forget that. As a portfolio, we raise it very firmly. There's a serious problem there. Councillors are being stopped at charge 3,000 rand. What's going on? How do we address the operating market support in general and specific increase in time? Those aren't amendment issues, but the real issues nonetheless. Anything else for today?
Chairman, the term that the race takes to 58, I don't know
the
that's okay. That's where we take efficiency out of replacement.
And you asked us to give figures to how many permits the issue is.
It's not nothing that is in here, but I'm thinking of cabotage that I think last week we went into length about it. I'm just thinking about the drivers of trucks, that as they're given permission from Swaziland to Johannesburg and into Durban. I don't know if it's part of your duty as CDFT, as you are giving permission for different companies to do that. But drivers are really expensive in being it taxi drivers, truck drivers and all that. As part of you giving permission to a company, a particular company, do you check on where are these people going to sleep and all that? Because to find them, I mean, how can a person sleep in a truck for more than 5 days? And you're expecting that person not to cause accident, because to me it's part of being efficient and safe. How can that person be their mind be okay if they're sleeping in a truck for so many days, and after that they're expected again to go back and without them resting? And you know, I've said that, and people were laughing. You know, when we had people from the department, I forgot their name. You have so many agencies in this department. That at times you find that truck drivers, they are giving a drug to keep them awake, and that drug has side effects of making them being sexually active. And after that, I mean, they are human beings. Later on in life, that's going to affect them, and you don't want to have those kind of people in our society. That's why they are raping all over. That's why the spread of HIV AIDS is it cannot be stopped and all that. I'm just saying, I know that it's like, it can't be part of what they are saying this law, but as CBF, you need to think about this. If these people are asking for permission, where are these people going to sleep? Do you have proof of they are going to sleep at this particular Formula One or what? I'm just saying.
So you're raising a very good problem. I mean, obviously, I assume that they don't go into the detail of exactly where they're sleeping from, but I mean, it's another reason we've dropped efficient, although you brought that in now. Interestingly. let's call it effective and safe. But safety is not just, it's these other issues as well, which we need to be thinking about, the safety of the driver. And you're quite right to remind us that in the most vulnerable sector, one of the most vulnerable sectors, economic sectors, to HIV/AIDS, which was partially addressed. And the Road Trade Association is well aware of this, and the city is taking initiatives to, along with the department, to address this matter. It's a very serious challenge. And therefore, we must think of the passengers, but you're also reminding us when we think of the drivers in this matter, who are very affected. So that seems to raise. So I suppose all we're saying, without extending the debate now, that we would urge you, without going into detail in terms of legislation and so on, when you look at the effectiveness and safety of the business and its sustainability, that this dimension as well needs to be factored in. If we had to follow, and we might be giving some prompts to follow, also by way, I'm sure it's exactly one of the issues that they will raise. So it's not something we're necessarily writing for legislation, but it needs to be part of the developmental perspective.
It's part of the Road Traffic Act, I think they're really working on that. We try our best to, you know, what they're doing now. They want to go to Baltic Bay from Johannesburg. It takes the Botswana business one day to Baltic Bay, because they can port the border post between Botswana and Libya is open. Itself across where Morocco and Europe are close, 8 o'clock. They drive right through, so we know where the path. But we cannot do something. We issue a permit for 3 months. We cannot control it.
How long does that trip take, roughly?
Through Botswana. Normally it takes 3 days. But they take it to the day.
They're taking a day, a day of how many hours?
I don't know. They leave in the morning, in the evening they're on boat. They fish there.
Yeah.
And the thing is, Johannesburg here, so it's here.
Yeah. It's something again, that you don't write into an amendment bill, but that we, in our different ways and from our different perspectives, but the unions themselves obviously need to be acted in, but also we know that, as you're saying, I mean, they have similar to stay awake and some of that under huge pressures, companies are reluctant to put two drivers when sometimes that would be necessary. So they're telling that we, that whole labor dimension is something that is also very important to watch. So thank you for raising that. I think it's important. Don't apologize for raising it. It's a very critical area.
We can just mention what she mentioned in the business plan for Malawi, operating the business plan in Malawi, 22 hours from Johannesburg to Lantyre or whatever. And we look at the business plan, you might have
three drivers.
And they must sleep over, they must come fresh drivers. You see, that is what we do.
The part of what have you got on the other side of time, the fresh driver and things like that. Absolutely.
Yes. And that is why we're working on a time test.
Yeah.
We can concentrate on passengers, but because we liberalize rules, we are a little bit far from the organization.
Again, it's that issue of market entry. You want to encourage it, but you don't want market entry where one driver is driving continuously for 22 hours in Malawi and so on. And that happens. That's sort of thing happens. So it's getting the balance right between not blocking new entrants and so forth on the one hand, and on the other hand, sustainability, safety, the whole, including labour, good labour practices and so on. Because in the minibus sector, we know. I mean, there's a minimum wage determination. But no one's paying it. And drivers really work under shocking conditions.
We don't want to say that our section is about the basic section.
Well, they need to be. They need to be. But upgrade. They need to be.
We this last Christmas season, we had two accidents.
Yes.
Now we're dead. It's a report to us and everything. We are proud to say.
Okay, good. Next time, when we have, because we have budgetary interactions and so on, and we don't interact enough with yourselves, and previous interactions have often not been very satisfactory. The whole day, so we've got, you know, 4 or 5 years of kind of very ineffective presentation practice. On. We'd like to hear some of that. This is the profile of what we're dealing with. These are, it's not just, the things you're mentioning in passing are actually very central to us getting it. Because this is part of what government is talking about when it talks about an industrial policy. How are we developing these sectors? What is the progress we made? And so on. You've got a really important role. That's what we've been trying to say, actually. We're not just regulating things down there. It's an important role within the whole region. We've got a real development role that's from outside and from your side, nothing can give itself to this. Rubber stamp is issuing service more
complicated. You know, when the beginning of Mozambique, there was no more creatures for mortgages. If somebody died there on the factory, we have to contact the owner here through our counterpart there to come and fetch the body because they got only a week to keep the body here.
So the sort of thing
that. That's what we. But where there is a communication with our company authorities all the way. I'm talking to each other.
Can I just ask something quickly on that? Sure. You were mentioning this little document that you sent out. I'm just going to share this with you. It's going to be issuing 51,000 in response to the goods. I mean, the goods are good. And then you also got happening is that what worries me in this report here is that we seem to give more issues than applications, if I'm reading the actual thing correctly. Can someone just explain it?
Is that the one application somebody is going to have 50 vehicles?
So the issue is the one that's important.
Well, the terminal.
When I read it, I said, thank you.
So there are 51,000 vehicles, freight vehicles, basically.
Yes.
And 10,000, almost 11,000 passengers.
And our target is to convert temporary permits to 3 months and the annual permits to the target for this year is 20,000.
Right. Okay. Thanks for that. Maybe that's how we should always begin legislation. Just have a little bit of a briefing on that. Because in the end, that's what we end up by doing. The legislation is in the context of what you're doing.
And the capacity again of the...
How many people are there?
Yeah.
How many employees in the agency?
So the 109 of us.
Yeah.
who are being teach 1,000 and 10,000.
But 70% of our staff are residing in law enforcement. That's where they are checking for compliance. In the office where we do this, there is only about 30 of us, the head office. But most of the people are at the region in the law enforcement office.
Okay, thanks very much. So when are we seeing each other again?
Tomorrow we have a meeting.
But just this meeting, when are we meeting you next?
11th of March.
And 11th March is Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And we hope to move towards the consideration of the case. Is that feasible?
Yes. What's happening? Is something else also? The Alameda Corporation Business Plan? They're also on the 11th. And then RSR is also on the Monday. Presenting their business plan to the portfolio committee.
I'm not sure. I wasn't aware of that. Monday is coming.
It's Tuesday, we meet. And Wednesday, it's a 2 days.
Yeah. We tend to meet on Wednesday, but also we've been batting some Tuesdays now.
So this will be a first one, because what is the 11th? Oh, Sunday. It's Tuesday. So then you're saying CPRTA.
Okay, let's just do, also with the state law driver presence, let's just do a kind of reality check. It looks as though, I mean, we said we're going to sleep on a few things, but it looks as though we're happy with most of what's in front of us, but we want to drop 4, the standard thing, we just want to drop it. There's a slight wording thing, we'll drop efficiency in, but put it safely. And then the 1 kilometer things which occur in 2 paragraphs, we're just going to drop the amendment. We're not changing the thing for the mandatory drop. That's it. That's what we're proposing. Otherwise, we're happy with what we've got in front of us. So barring some problems, it shouldn't be a problem. Then on Tuesday, to move toward the formal consideration of it. Okay, that's not good. We don't need to.
If the CPR go away and not try and look at a solution that we could possibly assist in terms of solving the problem.
Which problem? The free state problem. Yeah, but not in law. If I like a table proposal, in law, we can look at it. I doubt whether they've been batting with this one for a long time, and what they've given up there doesn't solve it in my view. So, but okay, I mean, I'll keep that space open, but provisionally what we're saying is we're going to drop the amendment, yeah? But we're sympathetic to the issue. We don't think this is the week to go, okay? So, in theory, we're okay. But then we can also then entertain a further discussion. Yeah, we've certainly engaged the DG around this matter, but we can maybe also then discuss what we want to do about that issue. And that's okay as well. So we'll do the legal formalization issue. But we might want to even just for you to go away maybe and make some suggestions. Could also make proposals. I mean, say to us, we want you to speak to the DG or to the department or to go to the free state or go and do an oversight on operating licensing board in free state or whatever. How can we be useful? Don't be disappointed that we've not proposing to not write those paragraphs, but rather come back proactively and give us some talk or suggest some talk to us.
You want to miss these two items.
Okay, no, fine.
And I'm sorry for my legal team here.
No, okay. Then tomorrow we've got the budget hearing. And
before you go on, I think you want page 2.
Yeah.
You must also look at that objective of this amendment.
Oh, right. In other words, the description of the objective obviously would then have to be. And could we ask yourself then to help us? Who's going to do that? Obviously, if we knock out those paragraphs, then we're going to have to just drop some of the objectives of the act. Thanks for that, Michelle. That's pretty straightforward. I'm crossing up. I would imagine. Okay, then tomorrow we'll meet at 10. Where are we meeting? E444. So that was where we were the other last week. E444. And it's the Road Accident Fund, if I'm not mistaken. And it's our Road Accident Fund. Okay.
It's the bigger room.
Are we stuck in the little one?
It's not in the system.
So we can't book the bigger one, but we'll migrate to the bigger one, with or without cross-border system. Okay. The problem is it's not in the system because it doesn't have recording facilities or something. It's not in the system. But there will possibly be some interest, public interest. There always is on the Road Accident Fund, so we might run into a space problem. But anyhow, okay. Anything anyone wants to raise? No. Happy.
I
knew that it was going to be.
No, you actually brought it up in the tip of my mind. The submissions, when are they coming? From Sabo and Alan?
Yes. They're coming deadline this Friday. Good point.
They're going to be here this Friday.
We'll expect that as soon as we get them. Probably in practice you'll get them on Monday.
I think they'll be in practice.
And we will certainly look at them seriously. And therefore, that might delay our consideration. But we think we're quite to make the kind of thing. But we might be in for surprise. But you assure us you've done your work with that.
I confirmed yesterday with the Boa. The Boa is against the appointment of the board, which is out of the. Popcrew is against the appointment of the chapter. But and the CEO is not by the board, so they will write you information.
Okay, so we might need to look at that. So that's a little bit. Just so that I'm not entirely shocked when I get it, they are against?
The board is against the appointment of the board, but it is removed from this. They support the age 5 years. It comes from them.
Popcrew
is against the appointment by the CEO, the inspector, by the CEO. The referee says the board must appoint them. But then the board cannot measure the performance of the CEO. That's why we brought it in. The CEO must appoint the staff.
And they're not happy.
And they are not happy with that. But I explained to them, but
okay.
The cargo is the last paragraph. We should remove now.
Just 1 kilometer.
And RFA is the tax clearance. You won't be surprised. 90% of the tax is the tax clearance. Straight people, 50% can be the tax clearance. And they now moaning about the tax clearance.
Okay, good. Let them come, and then we'll. It's amazing,
yeah.
Okay. Thanks. That gives us a bit of a sense of what the issues will be, and the one thing maybe sitting from those of us in and alive with top group might want to what sent through the merits of the teams. I mean, we'll look at what they stand for. The principle of the issue of what. And it's strange that a board would appoint.
They just want, the one thing they said, they want to open public hearing. I don't know what they mean.
For themselves, coming to.
Just public. Okay, they
come here. Maybe they know that the CEO doesn't have the capacity to identify a corrupt system.
Okay, thanks very much to everybody. Is there a question coming or not?
Oh, yeah.